Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, July 21st, 2014. With me today, I have the always brilliant John Martellaro. And how are you, John?
I am good this morning. Thank you.
Awesome. And also the stunningly talented Brian Chaffin. And how are you, Brian?
I am great, enjoying your pacing today.
Oh, excellent. I'm like on a pacing roll.
Yes.
Yeah.
You are.
Yeah. I thought today we might start off with John's perspective from Friday on how Google... Well, John, what do you think would be the right way to say it? They have a philosophy where they tend to be looking back as opposed to forward?
I think they're looking too much to the future without too much hindsight. And there's a couple of elements to that. I kind of had this theory that I cooked up looking at an exponential curve. You know, I spent a lot of time in my past looking at curves and drawing graphs and scientific analysis. And I started thinking about, you know, when you're on the low part of an exponential curve and you gobble up a little bit on the y-axis, you go way back on the x-axis, okay? And so I kind of compare that to knowledge versus time. And when you're on the high rising part of the exponential curve, all the things you can look back to don't go back very far. And so I got the idea that maybe that relates a little bit to Google's product strategy. You know, that's a relatively new company. They're relatively new on hardware. They started off doing the advertising thing, and now people have been questioning whether Google has a really, really sound, deep product strategy. You know, we talk about how they kind of throw things out there and see what sticks, and their tablets haven't really taken off. And Google Glass has come under some heightened scrutiny about the social aspects of it. So you kind of wonder, you know, how deep the company is looking backward in history. And then I ran across this article by New York Times writer Thomas Friedman, who did an interview with a Google executive, Lazio Bach, about how Google gave up on the idea of just looking at how smart people were. Their GPA, and just trying to gather all the smart people together that you could and see what happens, with the idea being if you put enough smart people together, hire them based on their GPA alone, something good will happen. Cool stuff would be thrown out there. People will love it, and they won't make a lot of money doing that. Well, it didn't work. And Mr. Bach lamented that, you know, they've kind of given up on that GPA thing, and they're starting to look at a more well-rounded approach to how people can be leaders and how they can be learners and their cognitive skills and teamwork and things like that perhaps give the company a little bit better perspective and insight. So then I went on and compared that to Apple. You know, Apple, anybody who follows Apple knows that Steve Jobs always talked about the intersection of humanity and the sciences and how Apple uses technology to help us do something rather than develop technology for its own sake. So that was the preamble to particle debris on Friday. And it got some attention. It was kind of fun.
Did you get any pushback?
Let's see.
Well, while you figure out if you got pushback...
No, I did not.
All right. So here's my issue as a consumer using Google products. My big issue is trust. And yes, there's a whole thing with how much of my personal information is Google using and how much of my personal information have they been able to mine and have without my knowledge. But when you put that aside, the other big trust issue I have is whether or not products are going to stick around. And the perfect example is Google Reader, where they took over the market for RSS readers and then just walked away from it and left it a shambles because they were just done. And when you see things like that happen, it's very difficult to trust the company, especially if you are using their tools on a daily basis for business or for whatever you need.
Exactly. That's sort of what I was hinting at in the preamble of the article, that idea of longstanding values that Apple evidences in the screening of its apps and the attention it brings to the design of products and the enduring quality and the value of the products in your hand, as opposed to short-term gain.
But does Apple's, the three of us clearly are Apple fans, right? Quick show of hands.
Yep.
Yes. Clearly.
All right. So that's all three of us. We're Apple fans. We like Apple products. We clearly like the way Apple does things. But does that necessarily invalidate Google's massively forward vision? Because the reality is that Google is looking to the future. Google is actually looking to leapfrog several concepts, several entire, I mean, like the driverless car. I think that if Google hadn't started this, what is this, 2 or 3 years ago now that they started working on this, or at least that we saw what they were working on. And if Google hadn't done it, I think that we would probably have all said that that's 20, 30, 40 years from now. Right?
That's a good point.
And is there anything wrong with them being that forward looking?
There is, in the sense that in the past, when technology was developing at a slower pace, we had time to size things up. There was sociological analysis, and people came to terms with it, and we were able to explore things. When you jump ahead too fast these days, you don't get a chance to gracefully implement a technology into the world. You end up invading people's privacy too quickly, shocking them too quickly. And then people get pushback and they say, whoa, let's size this up a little bit more. So the race to be faster and faster on the rising part of the exponential curve means that you don't have time to put your product in perspective like Apple does. That was my thesis.
Okay. Mm. And I'm about to go into bizarro world here and use Google Glass as an example of something good. I think if Google had not rushed forward exactly as they have with Google Glass and put us in this position where we're horribly uncomfortable with the privacy implications that go along with the technology, I don't think we would be seeing other advances in the way we interface with information coming. Certainly not nearly as soon as they will be happening, simply because Google Glass is out there. I think sometimes we do need to hit a zone where we're uncomfortable to be able to effectively move forward. And so in that sense, I'm okay that Google pushes us into that zone every now and then. Although I totally get that we have the implications of our personal information is potentially being abused.
When Apple first started out, the idea was to bring the personal computer into your home, and you could do things like, you know, your finances and things like that. And the first Apple ad that I ever saw in a computing magazine was this guy sitting at the kitchen table, and he was doing something with bill paying or checking account or something like that. So Apple has this long history of the man-machine interface. They've been doing this for, you know, 40 years. So when a company comes along and suddenly throws out something like Google Glass, they don't have that corporate history, that they're in an urgent desire to jump ahead with technology because we have the technology. And everything about our current technology these days is just because you can do something, does that mean you ought to do something? And if you can do something with the idea that maybe you can make some money and maybe you'll strike it rich, and maybe people will catch on and you can throw it against the wall and see if it sticks. And if that doesn't work, then rush headlong into the next thing. Seems to me to be in kind of contrast to the time Apple's taking with iWatch. Because when iWatch comes out, we expect this thing to be very well thought out. And we expect to say, oh, aha, yes, that's exactly what I need. I love that.
John, I think those are two sides of the same coin. I mean, you have Google Glass is, I think, going to end up being largely a non-starter, at least for the next several years. But I think that their self-driving cars are probably going to be a massive thing, and they're going to be a massive thing within 10 years. And so you've got two examples there. One of them, I think, is going to work out really well, and the other one is not going to work out as well, but I don't think that that invalidates their massively forward-looking vision.
It's good that they do it. I mean, it excites us, and that's what gets analysts excited. But just because they are pushing something really hard and have a lot of money to throw at the problem doesn't mean they're going to undermine Apple. Doesn't mean they will swamp Apple with their success, and it doesn't mean everything they do will be worth doing.
I actually think that the paths of Apple and Google are going to diverge somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're going to be less and less directly competing as time goes on, especially with Google doing its forward-looking things, because Google is focused in some areas, Google is focused on stuff that Apple isn't doing at all. And the areas where they are focused, where the two companies are focused on the same thing, quite frankly, I think Apple's beating them.
Well, you could dream up an Apple motto in another timeline. You know, Apple says, we only do the things that we think are worth doing. Google does everything. So, yeah, somebody has to. So, yeah, I think you're right about that diverging.
I'm going to agree with you, Brian. I think you're right, too.
Hey,
Brian. Okay, so another topic I wanted to look at. Actually, before I hop into our next topic, I wanted to thank everyone that's been sending in emails and interacting with us all the different ways that you can, because yay technology. And I want to remind everyone, we have a Twitter feed, TMO Daily. So if you want to interact with me in darn near real time about the show, head on over there and there you go, TMO Daily on Twitter.
Word to your mother, Daddy-O.
Daddy-O. Okay, another topic that I wanted to look at today before we wrap up is this whole thing with the European Union's European Commission telling Apple and Google that they can't use the word free to describe apps that are free but include in-app purchases. And this all stems from kids getting a free app that includes in-app purchases, games, and managing to rack up crazy bills through all of these in-app purchases without realizing what they're really doing. And so the EU saying, look, it's up to Apple and Google and these other companies that offer free apps to make it clearer that there are purchases that can be made. And they're saying it's misleading to call the app free.
Is this a statutory change or a regulatory change, or is this a complaint?
This is a complaint, and they are pushing Apple and Google to change their policies,
or they'll demand something stronger.
Right.
Right. They'll force them. Okay.
Right. And so Google has said, okay, yeah, whatever. Whatever word you want us to use, that's what we use. But the thing is, the EU isn't saying what word they want them to use to describe these free games with in-app purchases. Apple, however, is saying, you know what? We're already doing more than anyone else to make it very clear what in-app purchases are, and we've put all these procedures in place to help eliminate the possibility that kids will accidentally make these in-app purchases when their parents aren't supervising them. We don't want to make any changes. And I just find it first interesting that the EU is saying, hey, you need to change the word free, but we're not going to tell you what that word's supposed to be. And Google is saying, yeah, whatever. Well, Apple is basically saying, get bent.
Yeah, John, I know that you were tense about this, so why don't you go first?
Well, I know you had some thoughts on whether it was wise for Apple to come out with free apps, but yeah, I'm kind of in Apple's camp on this. Aside from the issue of whether Apple should have done free apps and how alluring it is. When the app is free, it's free. And I'm kind of tilted about this because this is kind of like policy meddling. Company comes out with products that are free that you can add to if you want to. And then there's all sorts of sociological issues associated with it. And then it's abused. And then people start pushing back on Apple. And that kind of bothers me.
Yeah, fair enough. But at the same time, the EU largely does a much better job of looking out for consumer interests than U.S. regulatory bodies. And sometimes they go too far, in my opinion. For instance, not allowing a company to have a proprietary charging dock.
Sure, and then settling on a standard that's crappy.
Yep. That's to me is a problem. But at the same time, there is a real issue here, and maybe it's one that we could talk about in some more depth another time. But there is a real issue here, and the problem to me is not so much Google and Apple. It's the companies who are building so-called free products that are dependent upon in-app purchases. And I think maybe those deserve that subset of so-called free downloads. Maybe those apps deserve to be called out for the, you know, shyster implementations that they are.
You know, that's an interesting idea. I'm wondering and thinking that maybe the public shaming of companies that are abusing the system could be more effective in the long run than forcing Apple to change the way they describe an application.
Well, Apple, I think the reality is that Apple would have to do this change. Apple and Google, that, you know, it's that public shaming. The public shaming probably has to be handled from within the App Store ecosystems.
All right.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. That you came up with. If an app has no functionality that's useful in Apple's perspective without an in-app purchase, then it has to be dinged. That's a great way to handle it.
Still not a simple issue, of course, because now you've got judgment calls. So
They make them all the time.
It's true. That is the very nature of the App Store.
That's true.
But I have a feeling Jeff's about to yell at us.
No, I'm not going to yell. I'm just going to say thank you. And we're out of time. Thank you, both of you, for joining me today. And I'm so glad that we have a short show because it just works really well. But there are days where I just wish it was like a 3-hour show. So anyhow, John, thank you for joining me today.
And yeah, it's hard to shut me up. I'm sorry.
That's all right. It's hard to shut all of us up. If you want to see that in action, just listen to Apple Context Machine. And speaking of, Brian, thank you for joining me. You
are. Yeah.